ECDC On Air,
the podcast of the European Centre for Disease Prevention and Control.
Keeping up to date with European epidemiology.
Hello and welcome to this podcast. My name is Catherine and today I am your host for this new episode of ECDC On Air, the podcast of the European Centre for Disease Prevention and Control, which is recorded from our headquarters in Stockholm, Sweden. In this episode, we are going to talk about one of the areas of work in ECDC, scientific advice. With us today, we have Barbara Albiger, who works at ECDC on scientific processes and methods in the unit of the chief scientist. Good morning, Barbara. Nice to have you here. Can you tell us more about yourself? What is your background?
Good morning, Catherine, and thank you for inviting me on ECDC On Air. It's a pleasure, actually, to be here today to discuss what is scientific advice, why ECDC produces scientific advice, to whom, and how does ECDC do it? So shortly on my background, I'm a microbiologist. And I spent 13 years in academic research before I joined ECDC in 2011. I held many functions at ECDC, but a little over 5 years ago, I joined a team working on scientific processes and methods.
What brought you to work on this specific topic?
What brought me to work on scientific processes and methods? Well, scientific processes and methods are part of what we say is good scientific practice and scientific integrity. They've always been in the center of my work from the moment I decided to become a scientist and a researcher. So I always believe that you need strong scientific processes and methods if you want your peers and fellow researchers to trust your work and your research. And when I say that, what I mean is that you need to use and produce the best possible data, follow the highest quality and ethical standards, use the most appropriate methods, be transparent about the methods you use, describe them well, and then allow your work to be reviewed. Only then you can gain confidence and trust of your peers in your scientific work. What I want to say also is that while it's very important to gain confidence and trust of your peers, it's equally important to gain confidence and trust of the public, but also from the entities that will use your work or research to take decisions. And we have seen now for several years that there is a contestation across the world by the public about science and scientists. And suspicion is growing towards how political decisions are taken. And there are many examples of this, and that includes the climate science deniers, the conspiracy theorists, the anti-vaxxer.
During the COVID pandemic, did you see more than usual, or is it the same amount of misunderstanding and suspicion?
The COVID pandemic has really seen a big increase of conspirational thinking, all of that fueled by fear and uncertainty. So to go back to what brought me to work on scientific processes and methods at ECDC, it is really the belief that producing, collecting, sharing high-quality evidence and providing robust analysis and interpretation is more critical than ever to maintain, and we can say even sometimes to regain, public confidence and trust in science. And in the context of ECDC, it's really making sure that ECDC provides the best scientific advice, and that really needs and requires rigorous scientific processes and methods.
Barbara, I hear that your intention is to fight against suspicion and misunderstanding of the general public. Explain how you will do this. And first of all, can you tell us what is scientific advice?
So in short, we can say that scientific advice, the one we produce here at ECDC, is about guiding the countries of the European Union, but also the European Commission on what can be done and how we can prevent and control infectious disease by producing and gathering the best available evidence. The scientific advice at ECDC is a stepwise process. It has actually six steps. The first one usually starts when we consult with our partners in the countries and in other agencies. These are the people we work daily with. And in our jargon, we also call them our stakeholders. And those can be public health experts in the National Public Health Institutes or in laboratories. So those are people like epidemiologists, data managers, microbiologists, disease experts, health practitioners. But we also actually consult public health experts in other international organizations like the World Health Organization. We also actually consult health authorities in Ministry of Health in the countries or at the European Commission. We consult them to better understand if there is a public health issue or a threat that needs to be addressed collectively at the European level. Or if there are existing gaps or challenges, and those can be technical gaps or knowledge gaps or knowledge challenges. And one example that comes to my mind is when, for instance, a new technology comes. But more specifically, we also consult them to know what they actually need. Another reason for consulting our partners is to avoid duplication. Indeed, ECDC does not want to start producing a scientific advice piece if it is already done elsewhere. Sometimes, though, ECDC also initiates scientific advice on its own initiative because the expert at ECDC have identified an issue or a need for scientific advice. This is step one. Step two is the formulation of the questions that are important to take a decision. So when you have identified an issue, you need to formulate the question you need the answer for. Let's say, for example, if a country wants to find effective ways to prevent and control tuberculosis among vulnerable or hard-to-reach population, and this can be homeless, drug users, people in prisons, migrants from certain areas of the world, any marginalized people that are usually not consulting doctors for their symptoms, and will have a hard time to follow a full treatment that usually is very long and sometimes even costly. The question you need to answer, the answer for, are: what is the extent of tuberculosis in this population? What prevents these people to go to the doctor to get diagnosed and treated? What can help them to go to the doctor and get treated or diagnosed? Do we know if it is effective to raise awareness in this population to improve the diagnosis and treatment? And even, is it cost-effective? Because money is a factor that policymakers and authorities need to consider too when they want to do intervention. So those are the questions that you need to formulate before you want to initiate a scientific advice.
So step one, consulting with the stakeholders, with all the people you work with. Second step, formulating the question. And now the step three, which is?
So step three is collecting the best available evidence to answer these questions. And if we take the example of tuberculosis, is do we have the data on the extent of tuberculosis in this population? Can we collect them from surveillance programs, for example? Are there studies that look at why these people are not seeking help? Are there studies that are looking on which kind of action can help? Do we know if there are models from other countries that are effective to improve diagnosis and treatment in this population? So we are gathering all the evidence we can to answer this question. And sometimes there can be a lot of evidence, or sometimes there can be no evidence. But either way, after collecting the evidence, the step four is to appraise that evidence. So whether you have a lot of evidence or not, you need to appraise it, which means, is the evidence strong or weak? Is the evidence of good quality or not? And then when we have appraised the evidence, we need to summarize it in a way that we can then analyze it. And the final step, which is step number six, is how this evidence then can be translated into recommendation or option for actions.
You mentioned several times evidence. What is evidence?
So evidence is any type of information or data that helps understand a problem and answer a question, whether it is an infectious disease or a threat. Evidence can be in the form of quantitative data, like, for instance, surveillance data, the number of cases of measles, for example, or they can be qualitative data, like observations. If we take the context of ECDC, we know that ECDC routinely collects surveillance data for more than 55 infectious diseases. This makes a very strong base for evidence. But evidence can also be retrieved from many other sources, like health database, scientific studies, clinical trials, reports, surveys. Scholarly articles published in scientific journals are one of the biggest sources for evidence. Scientific articles are summarizing results from studies and present an interpretation of these results. They also describe the methods used for the study. And before they get published, these articles undergo scrutiny by other researchers in the field in a process called peer review. And that is when researchers are evaluating each other's work as a way to ensure quality and to make sure that no stones have left unturned. With the COVID pandemic, we have seen an increase of a new type of articles called preprints. These are articles that have not undergone yet this scrutiny, but are shared as such to increase the access to new evidence in a faster way. And although those preprints are an important source of evidence, it is also important that they will undergo a peer review at some point. Another source of evidence is with the digitalization of our world, where we can now very easily access a lot of information on the web, and that is called the grey literature. And grey literature is any type of scientific information that is not formally published as an article in scientific journal. And there are many examples like website, database, reports from ministries of health, government, NGOs, the private sectors, data that you can actually extract from an abstract or a poster for a conference, maps, or even theses. I don't know the origin of the word, but grey literature is just to distinguish from scholarly literature. So it's basically just to separate the scientific articles published in scientific journals that underwent peer review compared to any other scientific information. But bottom line for scientific advice, to produce solid scientific advice, is to gather all the available evidence. And whether this comes from the scientific journals, the preprints, or the grey literature. And this is important to be able to take decisions that are informed by or based on science and knowledge and not on assumption.
I see that the work you do is very rigorous and based on facts that have been proved or that have been assessed. Could you give us examples of scientific advice?
I can give you a few examples of scientific advice that ECDC has produced the last couple of years. And I will start with the most recent ones, because we have just undergone 3 years of COVID pandemic, and that actually led that ECDC has been providing an unprecedented amount of scientific advice. And that went from the use of face masks to vaccination, preventive measures, or safe travel. In these very specific examples, ECDC faced a lot of challenges because we are in emergency situation and we have a fast evolving situation. And at the very beginning, there's very often not much evidence. And ECDC was still expected to provide robust advice to help practitioners and policymakers to take decisions. And that led to a lot of uncertainty and confusion. So that is the first example. The second example I can give you of scientific advice is at the beginning of the conflict between Ukraine and Russia. ECDC published a guidance on how a country that welcomes people fleeing the conflict can prevent and control COVID-19 in their reception centers. And I'm not going to talk more about it, because if you want to know more about ECDC's work on helping refugees, you can listen to a very good podcast from Dr. Kramas.
Yes, there is an episode of our podcast on this issue. It is the episode 18 with Dr. Piotr Kramarz, who talks about his recent field mission to Poland and his collaboration with the Polish health authorities to help the many Ukrainian refugees.
I will give you just one last example of scientific advice that ECDC has produced, and that is on the human papilloma virus, HPV. HPV is a virus that can cause cancer. We know it causes cervical cancer in women. The scientific advice was about providing guidance on HPV vaccination in boys. And the question was to find evidence on whether vaccinating boys would be effective to reduce even more the HPV-related illnesses, and whether adding boys to HPV vaccination program could be cost-effective. This piece of scientific advice was so important at the time because there was a very strong public debate on the safety of HPV vaccines and also on how effective they were and what was their impact on women. With the evidence that ECDC collected, each country in the EU could actually decide whether they wanted to implement HPV vaccination in boys in their national programs. I also just want to say that although ECDC provides scientific advice and recommendation, the EU member states do not have to follow. They have the right to actually adapt the advice or not follow the advice at all.
You mentioned all these steps that are necessary to produce scientific advice. So the question I have now is about how long it takes for you to produce a scientific advice.
In the best of case, you would have a lot of time. It takes quite a lot of time and a lot of manpower to produce scientific advice. But very, very often, we do not have so much time. But it is very important, regardless on the time you have or not, is that you follow the stepwise process that I have described earlier. So after having consulted with our partners in the country and at the Commission, after having formulated a question we need to answer for them to take decision, we need to synthesize the evidence. And very often it starts at ECDC with synthesizing the data we collect from the European Surveillance System, TESI. The data received by ECDC from 31 countries. And it can be, for example, number of cases of measles or cases of flu, the type of flu, or, and we know that a lot, the COVID-19 variant. We hear a lot about number of infection occurring after surgeries, number of infection resistant to treatment, etc. ECDC then puts the data of the countries together and then analyze them to gain the European picture and to be able to assess the European situation. And if you want to know more about TESI, you should listen to the podcast of Julien Beauté.
Yes, to understand how we collect and analyze surveillance data, you can listen to our podcast number 13 called This is Data Hub.
But as I said before, in most cases, surveillance data are not enough. There's also a need to look for evidence elsewhere. And this is complemented with the evidence from the source I described earlier, scientific articles, preprints, grey literature. You can also complement with asking countries for other types of data. And for example, behavior data are not routinely collected by ECDC, but countries might collect them and we might be able to ask them to provide us with those data. When all this evidence has been collected, they need to be put together, summarized, compared, analyzed, and interpreted. All the evidence can, in some instances, also be fed into mathematical and statistical models. And that is to help us to provide projections or make scenarios on how the situation can evolve and what are the probabilities of these scenarios to happen. What we say is that for models and projection, the more evidence, the better, the more reliable they are. And that is the same for scientific advice. But in all scientific advice that ECDC produce, we also consult external experts, either from the country involved or experts in very specific field. We use the peer review process that I have highlighted earlier that is used routinely in research, where experts review each other's work to make sure that no stone has been left unturned. And if there is the case that some question remained unanswered, it needs to be said so in the advice. So it is important to be transparent with uncertainties and limitation. These processes of consultation and peer review are fundamental to the production of high-quality scientific advice. Finally, as I said a little bit before in the stepwise approach, the final step is to analyze how we can translate the evidence into option or recommendation. Basically, what do this evidence mean for the health of the European Union citizen, and what could be done by the countries or by the European Commission, for example, to control and prevent a situation?
You said that when you produce scientific advice, it's important to be transparent. Make sure to produce high quality, not have conflict of interest. Can you be more specific and tell us what are the principles behind scientific advice?
So when producing scientific advice, ECDC follows five major principles. The first one is relevance. ECDC is a public organization working for the European Union countries. So all the scientific advice we produce needs to come in time and needs to address a need of the European countries. The second principle is independence and integrity. ECDC needs to make sure that its advice is independent from the influence of any lobbying. And for example, we can think about pharmaceutical industry could be a very strong lobby when we think about vaccines and vaccination, when we think about diagnostics.
How do you ensure that?
When we are asking external experts to provide peer review, we always collect declaration of interest. We need to make sure that if they have been consulting for the private sector, for pharmaceutical industry, we are aware of it, and we can then decide whether we can use that expert or not use that expert.
And this is mentioned in the reference within the scientific advice.
Every scientific advice actually referred to the people that have been consulted during the production, and it is mandatory for ECDC to have this declaration of interest. The third principle is quality. ECDC always make use of the best available expertise and evidence at the time. Sometimes this is the hardest thing. It's the hardest part for the scientific advice. And going back in spring 2020, at the beginning of the pandemic, when there was no data available, we saw the challenges it created. The scientific advice changed often to take into consideration the new evidence, which created uncertainty with the public and confusion. The fourth principle for producing scientific advice is accessibility. Because we are a public funded organization, all the scientific advice is made available at no cost and without delay to everyone. No one should pay to read what ECDC produces. This is ECDC's rule for open access.
And all the scientific advice are available on the ECDC website?
Yes, they are. And the fifth and last principle is transparency. The way the scientific advice is produced, the methods that are used, the people that are consulted, the uncertainty, what is not known, what cannot be answered, the limitation, lack of data or information or knowledge need to be clearly described in a transparent way. This is the same principle you have when doing research. You need to make sure that everyone using the same data, the same evidence, the same method than you can repeat your results and check your conclusion. And they can either come to the same conclusion or make their own conclusion. So those are the five principles behind scientific advice. So in summary, relevance, independence and integrity, quality, accessibility and transparency.
So you mentioned it a bit earlier, but who is requesting scientific advice?
So, as I said earlier, first of all, ECDC can initiate the production of a scientific advice on its own initiative because experts at ECDC have identified an issue or a need for it. But most of the time, scientific advice is requested from the countries in the European Union, the European Commission, or even sometimes from the European Parliament. And Catherine, you are yourself a EU citizen.
Yes.
And you know that every 5 years, you can elect the members that will be representing you at the European Parliament. The elected parliamentarians, they can ask ECDC to provide scientific advice, and they do so on a regular basis. And one example of this is related to the sharp increase we've seen recently in the number of children with hepatitis of unknown origin. When a parliamentarian asked the European Commission and ECDC whether there were data on this issue and what was the course of action that was planned to bring the situation under control. We can also have requests coming from partner agency, which are other EU agency or international partners like the World Health Organization. Just to give you an idea of the magnitude of scientific advice requests we have received at ECDC in 2021, 250 such requests came to ECDC from either countries or the European Commission or the Parliament.
So it's huge. Was it more than the previous years or is it the same?
It has tremendously increased due to the COVID-19 pandemic. We also see an increased interest from the EU citizen and from the media following the pandemic. And ECDC also receives questions, not requests for scientific advice per se, but a lot of questions from citizen and media. And the number of requests and questions have more than doubled during the pandemic.
Who is using them? Apart from these people who want to know more, just consulting them, who is using them?
ECDC scientific advice is primarily directed to health professionals in public health institutes and to policymakers and health authorities in ministries and at the European Commission. But with the pandemic, we have seen an increasing interest from the public in health issues. So ECDC has been working to make its scientific advice more accessible to the general public. And the use of social media and other media like infographics, videos, this podcast, for instance, has really facilitated that translation to the general public.
So what do you need to produce scientific advice?
We touched it upon it before, but in short, you need data, information or evidence, expertise, in other words, experts, whether they are ECDC experts or external experts, strong scientific methods and processes, and ultimately time. Data, expertise, and time can all be lacking, as we experienced at the beginning of the pandemic. When nothing was known about COVID-19 and when time was ticking to take action to save people's life. However, the scientific methods and processes should never be lacking. These need to be in place at all time, even under pressure.
What are the difficulties, the other difficulties you may encounter?
So there are many difficulties you can encounter when you produce scientific advice. As said earlier, the lack of data or evidence and the time pressure are two major challenges. On the other hand, too much data can also be challenging to analyze and make sense of. Lack of expertise and lack of expert can be an issue. And if you think about ECDC, it is still a relatively small agency with little over 100 content experts, so meaning people with expertise in various infectious diseases. So ECDC cannot do everything on its own. It must rely on other organizations' work and experts. So ECDC works very closely with the European countries through disease-specific networks, and these experts provide either data, evidence, or do peer review. This is also why ECDC must prioritize the scientific advice it produces based on the importance of the issue and the need and the resources that it will require to produce it and the impact it will have. And finally, we prioritize its scientific advice as well to make sure that it helps to reduce differences in health in the European Union. All the scientific advice we produce and all the work we produce, we need to keep in mind that the ultimate impact we want to have is to reduce the difference in health between the different countries so that we provide health equity for every European citizen. Respecting the agreed scientific processes and method is fundamental, especially under time pressure, to guarantee the high quality of the advice. And as we touched upon before, this is very often when we are under pressure, we have a tendency to not wanting to follow strict processes. Yeah. It is fundamental. It is one of the challenges we face when producing scientific advice. As mentioned earlier, in the very recent years, scientific advice has been under threat and faced a lot of contestation and suspicion from the general public. And this challenge highlights how important it is to make sure that scientific advice is rigorous, independent, and transparent. It also underscores that scientific advice needs to be communicated more broadly, to go beyond the health professional and the policymakers, and reach the general public. But science and scientific communication is not always straightforward. When you need to explain complex issues and when there are uncertainties. Uncertainties are, however, inevitable and inherent of all scientific work and advice. So those are the difficulties that we are facing when we produce scientific advice.
You mentioned it a little bit earlier as a challenge, but I would like to know, how do you manage uncertainties?
So first of all, uncertainties can be of different nature. It can be technical, when your data or evidence is missing, or when you have data that are very heterogeneous. The uncertainty can be methodological. For instance, when you try to identify the right evidence, the right data, or the right scientific articles, or when you try to retrieve from different health systems in databases. There can also be societal uncertainties. For example, the behavior attitudes, the social preferences, lifestyles, which can be important in scientific advice, for instance, on vaccination. And it is known that people tend to have an aversion for ambiguity and uncertainty. Although there is aversion and uncertainty associated with scientific advice and data, always need to be communicated in an open and transparent way to make sure that the nature and the consequence of uncertainty of the scientific advice are clearly understood.
Do you sometimes consult anthropologists or psychologists?
So social sciences is the new addition to ECDC, and we are actually consulting our in-house social scientists. And we are, since the last 2-3 years, are actually incorporated behavior science, social science, more and more into scientific advice, as we have seen that we need to take this into account to make sure that the recommendation we are actually giving in our scientific advice will be taken up by the right people that we want to influence. I can give you an example on uncertainties in scientific advice. And one of the examples that is very striking is the use of face masks in the community during the pandemic, when the evidence for the effectiveness of non-medical face masks or the face shield or, you know, this visor or respirator for the prevention of COVID-19 in the community was scarce and of very low certainty. This created a lot of confusion and ambiguity. Likewise, the evidence regarding the effectiveness of medical face masks in the community, there it was compatible with a small to moderate protective effect, but still there was a still significant uncertainty about the size of this effect. And that we have seen created a lot of confusion and ambiguity. What it has led to is that there are still nowadays studies that are needed, and there are studies ongoing to assess and evaluate the relevance of the use of medical face masks in the COVID-19 pandemic. But acknowledging this uncertainty is very important for acceptance of the scientific advice.
What is the difference between scientific advice and recommendation?
I use the term recommendation, but I also use sometimes option for action. Those are similar terms. They are synonyms, and both are inherent part of ECDC scientific advice. So basically what we can say is that recommendations are usually the conclusion of the scientific advice. What it means is recommendation is what ECD suggests could be done to address a problem.
But it's important to say that EU countries do not have to follow ECDC recommendation. They have the choice.
You are totally right, Catherine. Indeed, those are non-binding recommendations. So each European country can decide whether they want to follow ECDC's recommendation or if they want to restrain from the recommendation or if they want to adapt it to their own situation.
So why do we do that?
This is very simple. ECDC does scientific advice because it's the fundament of its creation. So let's just have a little trip in memory lane in the year 2003. When an elderly doctor checked into a hotel in Hong Kong because he was attending a conference. But before that, he had been treating patients suffering from a new form of pneumonia in his hometown on mainland China. Sounds familiar, right?
Yes, very familiar.
The same doctor became ill, and soon a few thousand people around the world are infected with this new virus. People start to panic, and it led to a large-scale economic and trade disruption. From today's perspective, it's very easy to forget how big SARS was. And the SARS epidemic made it clear in the European Union that an agency able to advise on threat of infectious disease crossing borders in the European Union was needed. And this is why in April 2004, the European Centre for Disease Prevention and Control, ECDC, was created and became operational in 2005, located in Stockholm. So basically, ECDC was created to collect scientific evidence and data, to evaluate them, and to provide scientific opinions, scientific advice, and scientific assistance to European countries and to the European Commission. That's basically our job.
How do member states use scientific advice? Do they have an impact on decision making at the national level?
All the scientific advice ECDC does is firstly for the European Union countries and for the European Commission to help them to make decisions that are informed for their specific situation. But as mentioned before, it is important to say that the European Union country do not have to follow ECDC's recommendation included in the scientific advice. One of the benefits of ECDC scientific advice, though, is that it summarizes the European situation and it gives a European perspective. The country then can apply or adapt the scientific advice to their own specific settings,
which are very different from a small country to a bigger country. Do they have an impact on my daily life?
Yes, they do. Although as a citizen, you might not always be aware of it. So we come back to the ECDC scientific advice on the face mask during the pandemic. That was first aimed for policymakers, but then it also was turned towards the general public, where ECDC explained why it was important to wear a face mask, when to wear it, where to wear it, and how to wear it. Another example, which is a little bit older, concerns antibiotics. Scientific advice behind the yearly campaign on the prudent use of antibiotics showed that with evidence that misuse and overuse of antibiotics gives rise to resistance and hard-to-treat infections. One concrete action following scientific advice from ECDC was the ban of over-the-counter purchase of antibiotics in the EU. You cannot buy antibiotic outside a pharmacy and without a medical prescription. This helped and still helps to keep antibiotics working. And if you want to know more about antibiotics, I think you can listen to the latest podcast, The Emptying Medicine Cabinet.
Yes, absolutely. This is the episode number 28 with Liselotte Diaz-Ogger explaining why it's so important that we are prudent with the use of antibiotics so that they remain effective. What is ECDC value in doing scientific advice?
We are living in an interconnected world, where a disease outbreak in one country can very quickly become international. And country needs to share and exchange information and expertise to contain this outbreak. And we've seen it with SARS in 2003, in SARS-CoV-2 in 2020, or with the Zika outbreaks in 2015. And if you remember those outbreaks, they were not in the EU, they were in the Americas and the Caribbean. But although it was outside the EU, they had implications for the European citizens that were traveling to this region. And if you remember, at the time, there was the Olympic Games organized in Brazil, one of the countries that was affected by the Zika virus. But also, we have European citizens living in the Caribbean islands. So we see Also, that scientific advice has an added value when we look at foodborne outbreaks or contaminated food that may be sold in many countries in the EU. So I would say the added value of ECDC scientific advice is that we have a very privileged position because we collect data from more than 55 infectious diseases, and we work with disease networks in over 30 countries in Europe. And because we have global partners, whether it is the World Health Organization or other Center for Disease Prevention and Control, like in the US, in Africa, in Japan, Israel, etc.
In China.
So therefore, ECDC can provide a very unique overview of the European situation and perspective within a global context. And this is valuable as such because each country is very aware of its own situation, but not necessarily about the countries around them or in the rest of Europe or in the world. So ECDC scientific advice has a great value because it gives this European overview. But it also has something else, which is a solidarity aspect, because it actually aims to save time and resources from the European countries. What I would like to just finish with is that it has a tremendous value, but scientific advice has been put under a tremendous pressure and was really under threat with the pandemic. And the reason for that is, first of all, there was the lack of evidence. Then we had an infodemic where there was too much information, including misleading and false information. We had rapidly changing situation. We had an urgency of the situation with people dying. The measures taken by different countries, the absence of face masks and of vaccines during the pandemic. All these factors have caused confusion in the public and distrust in the public institution and put scientific advice under threat. And this was a very hard lesson that we now should be using as an eye-opener, that scientific advice needs to be communicated more broadly to go beyond the health professionals and the policymaker to reach and engage the general public. And I would like to finish on that note.
So this podcast is coming to its end. Thank you very much, Barbara, for this interesting conversation. It's not so easy to understand the kind of work you do, and you explain it very clearly. We hope you enjoy listening to this podcast about scientific advice. If you would like to know more, please visit our website, ecdc.europa.eu, or follow us for the latest news on social media.